Welcome to Dr. Jeffrey Roth's Looking Good and Feeling Great podcast, live from Las Vegas, with his co-host, Daryl Craig Harris.
Fantastic. Well, here we are again. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I can't believe we're still doing this thing.
I know. Beautiful, sunny Las Vegas. Starting to warm up a little bit.
It is. So, yeah, it's a little bit crazy here, the weather in Las Vegas, because one day it'll be freezing cold, and then you get about 2 weeks, and then where it's really nice, and then it's, you know, 120 degrees.
Yeah, then it's the Sahara Desert.
that's how that rolls. But we're not complaining, because I don't have to shovel sunshine, so sorry, my East Coast
exactly
peeps back there. I do feel for you, but come out and live here. It's a good thing.
Yeah, we have a lot of East Coasters, actually.
We do.
So today we're going to talk about who is a candidate for not only surgery, but for, in our case, plastic surgery. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So a couple things that questions that we get all the time is you know, we can talk about procedures and we can talk about other things, but really kind of an overarching view is who really is a candidate for plastic surgery, because not every single person that walks into a plastic surgeon's office is going to be able to go to the operating room, at least for aesthetic plastic surgery. So we're not talking about burns or hand or that sort of reconstructive sort of thing. We're talking about kind of elective cosmetic surgery, right? And so for me, with elective cosmetic surgery or aesthetic surgery, is it's got to be two things. It's got to be safe, and it's got to be effective, right? Because you have the luxury of time, right? So if a gunshot wound to the chest, you have no time. You have to go boom downstairs, quick like a bunny, and start operating, okay? But with aesthetic surgery, typically you have some time to get things in a situation to give you the most optimal outcomes, right? So first of all, safety. So first of all, the patient has to be safe. And by that, I mean, we check things like height and weight to give us the BMI, body mass index, right? And yes, you can make the argument that that's not a spectacular indicator of success or health or this or that, but it gives you kind of a round number to deal with. And there is some literature to support now that those folks with higher BMIs, you know, over 30, some people over 32, depending on the literature that you read, are at increased risk for complications. You know, sometimes, especially for tummy tucks, where it's going to be that incision is going to be on a significant amount of tension. So, you know, tension is the enemy of good wound healing. And then you add a high BMI patient to it, and blood flow through fat is not as good as, you know, in a bone and vessels. And we all know that. But depending on who you read, some folks with a BMI over 30 can have up to a 75% risk of wound issues, right? And so it's, again, not being mean or not saying somebody's a candidate because, you know, whatever reason, really it's a patient safety issue. And, you know, we've kind of played this game before and we look for those things with a board certified plastic surgeon, as you and I have talked about a lot, is one is you go to a guy or gal so that if you have an issue, they can fix it. But even more importantly is can they recognize an issue before it starts? And other issues that we look for are medical issues, heart problems, lung problems, kidney problems, anesthesia issues. And I always ask even about smaller procedures, wisdom teeth, that sort of thing. Did you have a problem with anesthesia? And once, even by history, I was talking to this young lady. She was terrific. And we talked about history of anesthesia. And she says, you know, I haven't, I really never had any anesthesia, but you know, my mom and my aunt, they got really sick and they had to stay overnight. And I said, did they get really feverish? Did they have like a 106 fever? And she's like, yeah, that's exactly what they had. I said, okay, they have this thing called malignant hyperthermia. Now, yes, we can run all the tests and everything else, and we did plenty of that. But if you listen to the patient typically and elicit a good history, again, sometimes you can really avoid problem. That potentially could have been a problem if we went to the operating room. So we actually did test her. We did all the precautions. We actually had that one done in a hospital setting as opposed to an outpatient surgery setting. And you also take out all of the inhalational gases, et cetera. Anyway, we do all the processes so that we can go ahead and do the procedure safely. So again, we talk about medical issues. We also talk about other issues that the patient may not be aware of. For example, blood thinners. Now, that could be aspirin. That could be ibuprofen. It could be St. John's wort. It could be ginkgo. It could be fish oil. It could be lots of things. I mean, for a while, they were putting ginkgo in the coffee over at 7-Eleven. So people may not have known they were on a blood thinner, even from their morning cup of joe.
Right.
So we try to delve into that a little bit more, and again, try to set ourselves up for success. And when I was at UCSF up in Northern California, this lesson really came to pass, and this was 20-something years ago, I can't believe it. But you would operate on these folks, and they would kind of bleed and bleed and ooze, and you're like, what the heck? And you're thinking of all the medical things that it could be. Could it be DIC? Could it be, you know, all these different things? You're like, oh gosh, how am I going to handle this? Well, you get through the operation, everything's fine. And then again, you ask them afterwards, and it being Northern California, they said, oh yeah, I eat St. John's wort all the time. I have a, you know, I grow bushels of the stuff in my backyard. So ever since then, I went ahead and started taking a herbal history. And oftentimes people will go ahead and be on supplements, which may go ahead and, you know, cause bruising and bleeding. So right. Those are those things that you try to get ahead of. So is the patient safe? The other thing is safety. Is the place and is the surgeon safe, right? You hope the surgeon's safe, right? And, you know, we laugh and giggle at that. But by safety, you want to make sure that he or she is well-trained. Again, my bias is towards board-certified plastic surgeons, of course, because I know that those folks have had the training, et cetera. And then where are you doing this as well? The back of a tile shop to go ahead and get buttocks injections is not the place to be. And I say that because we had a case of just that here in Las Vegas, where the poor lady died because she was getting that done in the back of a tile shop here in Las Vegas. And she didn't die of an embolism, which is usually how they do it. They were giving her so much lidocaine that she actually had lidocaine toxicity and affected her heart. And that's what she actually passed away from. So again, you know, safety. Is the patient safe? Is the place and the surgeon safe? Is it clean? Do they do this operation all the time? And where I go, I'm very, very blessed, is the people around me really know what they're doing, and they know my next step, and I can count on them. And I know that the nurses in the room, whether it's Jen or Kelly, will have my stuff ready to go for me. And if I have a issue, they know where to find the stuff that I need.
Yeah, you have a great team. Yeah.
So, and I, you know, Vern, who go ahead is my surgical assistant, he's great. And there's a lot of other folks that I work with, and again, I'm going to miss somebody, and they're going to be mad at me when I show up at the surgery center. But and then the recovery room team is also terrific too. But you have to try to have that in place for the best outcome of the patient, and not that, you know, I have to worry about, oh gosh, are they being taken care of? I know that they're being taken care of and being taken care of well. And we also talk about, you know, effective communication. I try to communicate with the team. I text them what the schedule is going to be and if there's anything special, et cetera, so that they're prepared. So we try to make it easy on each other because it's all about the patient and trying to go ahead and get the patient to have all their ducks lined up in a row and have our ducks all lined up in a row for the best success. So again, from a patient standpoint, from a surgeon slash place standpoint, is you try to go ahead and get everything together to go ahead and get the best results. So, and then again, getting a little bit towards the patient, as you and I talked about, is if you listen to the patient, they'll tell you a lot of stuff.
Right.
Right?
So important.
And I had an old professor tell me that diagnoses, when you talk about internal medicine and, you know, which is what House does, you know, on TV, right? So quintessential House guy. And nobody would get away with that behavior, by the way.
Exactly.
In real life. So it's entertaining. Probably it's Hollywood. Not. But well, when I was training, yes. But nowadays, you can't do that. So, which is a good thing. So is you listen to the patient, 80% of the diagnosis can get made on the history, right? Of what's going on, when it did start, et cetera. And then you go and you get the lab test and you get the MRIs, and you get the x-rays and CTs to confirm what your diagnosis is. And it's a differential diagnosis, which means you make yourself a list and then you eliminate things as you go along, right? And so that's like, you know, detective work. In fact, when you go ahead and you read, you know, detective series and Sherlock Holmes, the guy who wrote that was a physician. And you can tell that he made a differential diagnosis, and then he went through the medical process.
Yeah, his method of operation.
Right. So yeah. So you learn that. Okay. So basically, this is, all right, so we're going to listen to the patient. And anybody who works in my office can tell you that I'm not efficient, okay? I spend way too much time with patients, and the folks in the office always, you know, are like, oh, come on, let's go. But I really do want to listen. I really want to hear. And what I want to hear is not just the physical stuff, but the whys, right? What's my motivation? What's the motivation? Why did they come through the door, right? Mm-hmm. And the whys can be, well, I had a bunch of children, and so my body changed, and I just kind of want it back closer to what it was before having kids. And kids are great, but they knock the heck out of a woman's body, especially 2 or 3 or 4 or more.
Right.
And so, you know, can I get that back so I can feel better in a dress or about myself? Post-divorce, yes, there's the revenge body.
Yeah, that's not uncommon, right?
And it's Vegas, and it's here, and yeah. And so you get that a little bit. Now, again, getting a new body is not necessarily going to have your boyfriend or girlfriend or back, okay? But if you're done and you're really done and like, okay, that was my chapter, and now I'm moving on to another chapter, and I want to get out there, I don't feel confident, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, this is what I identified is going to be issues. Can we fix it? What's the options? And it's my job is to go ahead and try to give as many options as I can and see what works for that particular patient. The other thing that we've been seeing more and more of lately is weight loss, especially now with the new weight loss drugs that really work. And we can talk about, do they work too well or too fast, all that. But the bottom line is more and more people are coming in who have lost significant weight.
Have excess skin, have, right.
100%. And yeah. So we get a lot of folks that whether it's diet and exercise, which is always the best, versus a bariatric surgery, which is still terrific, okay? The folks that do it well do a nice job of that, versus the new drugs that are out there. We get guys and gals coming into the office, especially guys who have lost 100 pounds plus, and they say, hey, doc, I just don't want to fold my skin into my pants anymore.
Yeah, that's not comfortable.
No, not comfortable. And sometimes you get rashes underneath, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been seeing lots and lots more of that. And from my standpoint, really, I'm privileged because they've frankly done the hard work, right? And it may have taken them, months, years to go ahead and do this. And they're finally coming into my office and going, okay, I'm at my goal weight. I'm at my stability point. I'm, plateaued where I want to be. What are my options? And it's my privilege to go ahead and put the cherry on top, if you will, or basically take away the stuff that's going to be in their past and basically
kind of get them to home base.
100%. And kind of get them to where they want to be. And basically, it's a anatomical issue with a surgical fix. Those folks that, let's say, have had a diastasis recti, right? Rectus muscles have splayed apart, and they can do 1,000 sit-ups, but they can't get, flat there anymore. And so that's, again, an anatomical problem with a surgical fix. We go back in there and fix it, and gals really love that when you do the plication at the same time as the tummy tuck. So there's also physical issues as well. For example, the gals that come in with really big breasts and they have back and neck problems, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found is some of those folks are our happiest patients, in as much as some of them, no guarantees, but some of them are happy in the recovery room, especially folks that have had significant pendulousness for so long.
Right.
And you go ahead, you do one operation, and you put everything back where it's supposed to be. It's kind of like if you have a backpack, and the straps are too long, and you shorten the straps, so the backpack is now where it's supposed to be. Some sort of issue. So there's many whys to why people come in. And the next thing is okay, so now we have their motivation, we have their why. What's the goal? Okay, what do they want to do? How do we get from point A to point B? And can we get there? I mean, physically, can we get there, right? And so are these goals obtainable, right? We have gals that come in and they have breasts that are really, really long, right? And for whatever reason, and they show me pictures of Carmen Electra, okay? And you're like, okay, all right, we can't get from there to there, but we can get closer. And then we have to have a talk about realistic expectations as well. What can we really expect after a surgery to see, right? Because people aren't made out of clay or wood. They're made out of, flesh and bone. And so that sometimes you have to take into consideration, especially if they have stretchy skin or they've been out in the sun a lot or they've been smokers in the past or whatever the case may be. And the other thing too is this all comes at a price. And whether the price is scars, whether the price is taking time off from work, whether the price is not being able to go to an event because you're going to be, laid up afterwards. All of that sort of thing is part of that as well. What, how many resources, and you can define resources however you want, are you willing to go and put towards this to go from point A to point B? And so we try to have ourselves a really good long talk about that so that when they leave the consult room, I hope that the folks have had their questions answered and that they have a good feeling of what a reasonable outcome might be. And now they're empowered with usually a few options of, okay, I can do X, Y, or Z. What makes the most sense to me and my universe, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
And then decide to go forward. And maybe not go forward at that particular time, but to go ahead and put it off, you know, a month or two or whatever, so that they can go ahead and have family around them for a good recovery process or whatever the case may be. So nowadays, the question is, you know, when somebody comes in and makes the appointment, everything else like that, really, it's an interview process. One is the patient, and this is really kind of a unique point of medicine and aesthetic surgery, is the patient's interviewing the doctor. Because guess what? Especially in Las Vegas, there are lots of docs.
Okay? They have a lot of choices.
There's lots of choices. And the board-certified plastic surgeons here in Las Vegas, I think, are really good. Of course, cities that always have lots of them, New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Beverly Hills is like, it's a mecca in of itself, et cetera. But having said all that is, so that's one part of the interview process. And I think that's important because I think that the patient has to like the doctor, they have to like the office staff, they have to see if it all works. And then also it goes the other way is what I'm listening for from a physician standpoint is okay, are there red flags here? Not red flags in the common sense, like, oh, he's an icky person. No, but red flags like, okay, for all the things we talked about, are they on blood thinners? Are we going to be able to go from point A to point B? Mm-hmm. Am I the guy for this patient? Okay. I had one patient come in, very complex, complicated case, wanted a certain thing. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not your guy. But I know a guy, okay, that will do a really good job at this. And I and looked at me like I'm nuts. And I'm like, no. I said, no, I'm not your guy. He says, you need to see, you know, Dr. X. And they actually came back into my office. Mm-hmm. And they actually gave me a present. You don't have to do that. So, but to say, right. I know you didn't do the surgery, but your referral got me to him and he did a great job. And look, and he did a great job.
Awesome.
And in my opinion, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's the patient's outcome and patient safety.
Absolutely. Patient always comes first. If you continue to, and I tell the young guys and gals coming out, if you just continue to repeat that like a mantra, you're going to be okay. You're going to do the right thing. You're going to do the safe thing. And it's going to be okay.
I mean, also, too, that leads to patients trusting you, which we talked about before the episode.
Right.
That's so important, right? They have to feel comfortable with you. They have to feel like they can trust you.
Right.
And then also, too, as a doctor, you have to feel like you can trust what the patients are actually telling you when you're doing your consults. Is that something you, as part of the process, you're looking to see if they're being 100% honest with you?
Well, sure. We hook them up to a lie detector test. No, we don't. Yeah. We don't.
Sodium pentothal.
No. My CIA friends would say, hey, doc, you got to stop it. So, no. No, but you want to get a good feeling. And it really is a two-way street. And you're in this thing together. I mean, and having been a surgical patient before, you know, hernia, this and that, you know, you're lying on the table, right? You know the lights are about to go out. Okay. You know you're going to go to sleep. You hope the anesthesia person knows what they're doing. You're going to be able to go to sleep and wake up. You hope you know the surgeon knows what they're doing, is going to do a good job for you, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of trust there. Okay. So 100%. And having that experience, then I say, all right, how can I make the experience go the other way better? Right? How can I go ahead and take away some of the fear and the consternation and stuff? And we see that especially in moms. Moms are more afraid of anesthesia than they are of the surgical process because they're like, oh, it might be elective. Oh, why am I doing this? You know, right. I have three young ones at home. What if something goes wrong? And again, as you and I have talked a lot, is you're actually safer in the operating room than you are driving to the operating room that day because it's such a controlled environment. So we go ahead and we talk about all of that as well. That's part of the who's a candidate. Those are those things that people bring to the table and we talk about them and we try to take the fear away. Because dark rooms are scary because you don't know what's in them.
Right.
And if you walk in, you turn the light on, oh, it's a desk and a chair. It's not that scary.
Yeah, that's a big part of what you do is to illuminate the conversation.
Right.
Explain things clearly, let them make a choice.
Right. So my thing is to go ahead, see what I have in front of me, see what the goals are. Is this going to be safe and effective? Give some options and then listen and really kind of go from there and try to empower the patient as much as we can to make the right decision for them. And they may have two or three really good options, but I don't know what their daily life is, et cetera, et cetera. They know it better than I. And I say this all the time. I said, I don't know what's going on in your universe. So this is options and whatever fits best. And that's what you should probably go for.
Absolutely. How important is the support of friends and family for the outcome?
Oh, I think it's crucially important. And we talk about that too. We take a social history. Part of that social history is, okay, you know, who do you live with? Do you live on, you know, the 10th floor of a row home? Okay, you know, that sort of thing. Because again, we want to set ourselves up for success, right? So here in Las Vegas, as you know, lots of people don't have extended family or extended nuclear family. Sometimes they have friends that are like family. Sometimes they have roommates. Sometimes their mother-in-law can fly in from Baltimore, whatever the case may be. But we do want people, depending on the procedure, to have somebody in the house for at least 72 hours, not, you know, a whole week. That'll be great. There are also people for hire here that will go ahead and do that. That'll come out. They'll stay with you. They'll make sure that you take your pain pills when you're supposed to. They'll get you up and moving around, et cetera, et cetera. So there are outfits, really good outfits here in town that do just that.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the ultimate thing is the patient's best outcome.
Right.
They're making a significant investment. So
sure. Yeah, sure. And again, you want to go ahead and make sure that before, during, and after the case, you put them in the best position to get the best result.
Awesome. Dr. Roth, tell people how they can reach you and follow up if they want to ask questions.
Sure. We're all over the place. Meaning we have a homepage, which is, I guess, the keystone, which is www.jjrothmd.com. That's our website. And then social media. We are all over the place. This podcast, obviously, you found us, and we're on all of them, I guess. We're on Podbean and Apple.
Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, all that. There's so many these days.
Yeah, so we're on that. And of course, our other social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and MySpace and Friendster, I think, maybe.
No, there's no more MySpace.
I'm dating myself.
Yeah, you could find us at Las Vegas Plastic Surgery. Real easy to find. And we're the only one that has that name, luckily.
That's right. Yeah, it's our DBA, actually a corporate name. But having said all of that we're all over the place. And please reach out to us. We actually do look at our DMs. We actually do look at our emails. We actually do that. And if you want to hear something on the show, by all means, let us know and we will address it. Because for me, it's fun getting good, solid information out there. And if there's something that you've always wanted to hear about, by all means, let us know. We'll get that on for you.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please like and subscribe to hear future episodes. And thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining us. For further information, please visit the podcast website link for Dr. Jeffrey Roth. See you next time.